Doc Brown's time travel rules are the same as Cameron's dad's house rules. It's very touch. Cold and very beautiful, and you're not allowed to touch anything.
Movies. Do you miss going to the video store, acid wash jeans, and MTV with music? I know we do. Welcome to Mike and Anthony's Soda Pop Culture Club. Me, Mike, along with my co-host Anthony.
Jigga what? Jigga who? What the hell is a jigga what?
What the hell was that?
The question was asked before it was even a question.
Oh. We bring our take on a classic movie every Monday from the 80s, 90s, and beyond, during which we will play the game, and we will open up a six-pack of favorite scenes. We also point out a couple of generic scenes as well, maybe a give or take a few there. At the end of the
like
show.
Like always?
Yeah.
Somebody can't fucking count and stay on track?
Yes, that's correct. And at the end of the show, we'll rate the movie 1 to 24 cans. One can is never getting released and being able to eat that cake like Uncle Joey. And 24 cans is coming back to the future and having a nice, pristine 4x4. That is.
Oh,
with
yeah.
With that girlfriend.
Like four chicks at once, or what's the 4x4? How does that work?
The Toyota 4x4, his truck?
I don't know. You know something I just figured out? Here's with your whole six-pack shit, because you will do 13 of them, but it's still called a six-pack.
Call this a tangent.
You know people. Who you would be? You would be the Domino's delivery guy. Where 30 minutes or less, it's free. Yeah, you get your pizza in 30 minutes, but I'm going to stand here and fucking bullshit with you until your pizza's cold.
That's right.
Make you not know what, people, get your pizza.
That's the move right there.
That's how you do it.
All right, but let's get back to it. Before we get to all that with the movie, we want to let you know that we want to do the movie suggested by our listeners, and there's a few ways we can do this. One is join our Patreon. So suggest movies on there. We'll do it. Two, if you want us to do a movie and you want us to do it right flipping now, you could do a fast pass. You send us $25 to our Venmo or PayPal at Soda Pop Culture Club. We do your movie. It's the next thing we do. And right now, I'm just going to say we're doing what? Back to the Future, all three in a row?
Yep.
And if someone were to send me one, like when we were recording this today, if I were to get it, I'd go, oh, shit, I'm going to have to postpone the other two Back to the Futures to do the shit you paid for. So just think of it that way.
Yeah, if you want to pay to fuck up the schedule, do it.
That's what we're saying. Pay to fuck up the schedule. That's what you're here for. Plus, we have a third way to suggest movies, and that's on our website. We have a little portal that you can suggest them in. That doesn't guarantee we will do it, people. If we like the idea and we feel like it, it may show up on the schedule at some point. But you can do it there, and we do listen to that, I do promise. You can also buy merch. Check out our schedule. That's also on the website. And Anthony has a last way that you can request. And we want one person to do this, because I think we ask every time. And it's like no one's done it yet. So please do this.
Maybe if we didn't take 5 minutes at the beginning of every episode to go over the shit and did a little quicker, people would do it. Anyway, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And in your review, type in a movie you'd like us to do.
Say, Anthony sucks. Please do. Dunstan checks in.
That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do. Because he loves that movie. And a couple more things. Don't forget to share the show with your friends. Check out our Instagram at Mike and Anthony. We post memes of the movies we do and also memorials because all the celebrities have been dying. Things like that. So yeah, check us out there as well. And like he's already said, Apple Podcasts, do that review, leave the comment, put a movie in there, all that shit.
Why do you keep repeating the same shit? That's why this takes forever. We already said that.
Because
now you're repeating.
I have a thing I do and get over it.
You just don't shut up.
You're right.
There's too many unnecessary words.
Anthony, too many
unnecessary words spoken by you.
That we're on a podcast and you have to speak because people can't see what the hell you're doing.
I am waiting to eat my pizza and you won't shut the hell up.
Where's your pizza? Show me the pizza. Okay.
It hasn't been 30 minutes yet.
All right, here's the trailer.
Steven Spielberg presents Back to the Future, a Robert Zemeckis film. Marty leads an ordinary life.
No McFly ever amounted to anything in the history of Hill Valley.
Well, history is going to change.
And 1985 is not his year. But Dr. Brown is about to change all that.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
He's sending Marty 30 years back in time.
It works!
It's a flying saucer from outer space!
Now, he's trapped in the past.
This has got to be a dream.
About to meet...
Chocolate.
...his future father.
He's a peeping Tom.
Wow!
And he's making an impression on his mother.
He's an absolute dream. And he can sleep in my room.
Anything you do could have serious repercussions on future events.
Now, he's got to make his mother and father fall in love.
For crying out loud, I haven't even been born yet.
And only Dr. Brown... can help him get back to the future.
Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
Precisely.
Michael J. Fox.
Whoa, this is heavy.
Christopher Lloyd.
There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
Back to the future.
Back to the future. You like that?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Fucking great.
It is great. It's a great movie. That's what we're doing. But before we get into that, Anthony knows what time it is. Do you know what time it is, Anthony?
Time to play the game.
He gets so down on it. But it's time to play the game, and everybody knows what the game is. The game is where I'm going to read three movie reviews. Two of them are real. One of them is fake. And Anthony, in his infinite wisdom, tries to glean which one I wrote. Because he is a genius.
Is a stretch.
What?
Infinite. Is a stretch.
Right. Well, you know what? On a certain timeline, it feels like it's infinite, right?
Like all the bullshit that I know in the world that you could fit on an index card. This is what
your
I'm working
name
with.
Is all the bullshit you need to know, and that's
this is what I'm working with.
So are you ready, Antoine?
I'm always ready to get this.
All
over.
Right. Jim Baker of the Chicago Tribune. Pure cinematic magic that takes us all on a journey. John Hartle, film.com, so busy being clever that it trips over its own ingenuity. Steve Nash, three movie buffs. Crispin Glover and Christopher Lloyd are both standouts.
Read the second one again.
John Hartle, film.com, so busy being clever that it trips over its own ingenuity.
Okay. And can I have the third one again, please?
Scott Nash, three movie buffs. Crispin Glover and Christopher Lloyd are both standouts. Wow, people, I can see the smoke coming out of his eyeballs and ears.
I want to say, just trying to think of what review sounds fake.
Anthony's penis is long. That's a fake statement.
Yes, long and thick because it was incomplete. I'm going to say the second one.
Okay, is there a reason why?
Only because for anybody to say to me that Christopher Lloyd and Crispin Glover stand out in this movie and not
recognize...
That's
the third one.
That's the third one?
Yeah, the second one of the two you made me read, it is that.
Then
but
I'll
it's
go
the
with
third.
That one. I'll go with
the
that.
The third one?
Yeah.
Okay, so if I told you you were wrong, what would your second choice
be? The second one.
And if I told you you're wrong, what
the
would your
first one?
Fuck you. Jim Baker or Samantha Baker's father in 16 Candles.
Yeah.
Probably thought this movie took him on a journey, but, you know, it happens.
That's a good fucking reach right there.
Why? It's his name. Mr. Jim Baker. It's in the.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? I can't.
I just want to keep going with the show now.
So, people, when he loses. He wants to move on because he doesn't like to dwell on his losses, I guess, or feel humiliated. But that was good work, man. I admit, you came close.
I did.
It was your third choice.
Yep.
You had no choice.
It took me three fucking guesses. I already told you before, we could do a good game. You give me a movie quote and I'll name the fucking movie, but...
We could do that.
You don't want to do that.
I would totally drill. I would, you know, does it have to be
can't
famous?
Can't go with, like, random shit that I've never seen, though.
Like, can I have a soda from a movie?
You're a fucking idiot. See? Why nobody likes you, Pip. All right. Here's our breakdown by the numbers, directed by Robert Zemeckis and starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, Thomas F. Wilson as the Biffster, and Claudia Wells as the original Jennifer Parker. Back to the Future was released on July 3rd, 1985, taking in $388.8 million at the box office against a $19 million budget. It scores 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb and 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
How is this lower on Rotten Tomatoes than Terminator?
Fuck if I know.
This is a better movie. Like,
fuck if I know.
Like, it's a better time travel movie even. Like, I didn't even plan to do a time travel kick, but you know what? Now I'm thinking about it. Maybe every movie from to here to the end of the year should be just time travel movies because they're fun.
Let me tell you. Here's all I can figure is there must have been a drastic fucking change in the special effects world between 1984 and 1985 to go from Terminator to Back to the Future.
There was a little bit. Well, there was ingenuity. You got to understand, Zemeckis and Spielberg produced this, so you had two of the most brilliant minds in Hollywood when you just had James Cameron on the other one whose ideas kind of were stolen, if you remember, and he didn't execute the vision the way he could because the technology hadn't caught up. And then he did, Titanic? And what did he do? Steal an idea of a ship sinking and then put a... He basically made it Die Hard on a boat, but with a love story. That's what he did. Sorry. I can't help but say fuck that movie. Anyways.
Titanic is Die Hard on a boat?
Yeah. It has a ticking time bomb. It has a ticking clock.
You're and insulting Die Hard by saying that.
Yeah, you're right. Die Hard's a better movie.
A fucking Christmas movie, that's for sure.
You know, and speaking of that, I just want to tell you, I was watching Die Hard with a Vengeance last night, and...
You were watching Hard On with a Vengeance.
No, my wife and my daughter even sat there and watched it with me.
So addicted to porn.
And I was going to tell you that we should do an episode that's not about any specific movie, but do it about movies that copy the Die Hard thing, and like, what's the best Die Hard on a movie? You know, because there's so many. You could think of so many, like Skyscraper more recently.
Speed.
Speed, it's, yeah. So I'm just saying, there's so many, that would be fun. Anyway, let's get back to this. You know, there's some things, I have some facts, and I just wanted to go over them. There's a lot of them. And I wanted to hear your opinions on these and things like that. But the first one I get to is about the idea of this movie. The idea for Back to the Future came to the writer, his name is Gale, when he was at his parents' house rummaging around in their basement. He came across his dad's old school yearbook and wondered if they would have been friends had they known each other when they were both 17. Gale mentioned this to Zemeckis, and they turned it into a high-level story with three basic ideas, and here's what they were. Number one, high school kid gets sent back in time. Number two, he meets his parents. Number three, his mother falls in love with him.
See, right there, okay?
That's the part I don't understand. Where
does this come from that essentially you want to do a movie and wonder what it'd be like if your mom wanted to fuck you?
Yeah, and
was that a question that came to their minds?
Would
my mom do me if she
very
knew
edible.
Me? Would
very
she
edible.
Do me if she knew me?
My thing is like you could have fleshed that out as an idea as my mother mistakenly falls in love with me while I'm trying to get my parents together, like something like that. But like it, you could have, I guess maybe they needed the kernel of the weirdness in order to get to what it became. I guess.
Because this is a premise for a really twisted fucking porno movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know. But they fleshed that. I just want to say they did end up fleshing that out into the full screenplay. A couple notes. I got some more.
Facts. You know. Oh, shit. Hold up. Would this have improved the plot of Terminator had you had sex with your mom back in time?
Like John Connor.
John Connor's also his dad. How about that?
You know, once you get into this time travel mind fuck,
you can do whatever you want. But well, John Connor is his own father.
Let's look at this. Let's look at these movies to handle time differently, right? So on that one, how did Kyle Reese be the father of John Connor? You know what I mean? Because it had to fulfill a prophecy to get John Connor there. So that means, like I told you before, there has to be a reality where Kyle Reese just randomly went back and did John Connor's mom.
Right.
So, and then later on, he has to go back and do it again.
I know.
So I'm just saying, it blows your mind. And I'm guessing in this, it's the same thing. You know, they kind of follow some of the similar rules, but you don't really see, you know, the butterfly effects of John Connor and Kyle Reese's world as much as you do here. Like, they tend not to dwell on what's in the future. You only see what's happening in the present, like either in the 80s or the in 91 when they did number two, right? Like, you only see the present day on those. You don't really get to see how the butterfly effect works in the future until later movies, which really sucked. So kind of this one lets you see, lets you in on the little changes that can happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Little changes. Anyways, I got a couple things. Marty's surname, it originally was not McFly. What do you think it was? I'll give you a guess. I mean,
you can give me a guess since I'm staring at it. McDermott.
Are you in the notes?
Yeah.
He's in the notes.
What the fuck do you think?
People, he's never in the notes, so it's
kind of weird. I'm
always
in the notes when we do the show.
Oh. Okay, another thing, the famous clock tower climax to the movie wasn't part of the script. So there you go. Instead, Marty and Doc would visit a nuclear test site in Nevada, and a nuclear explosion would send the DeLorean back to the future. This was changed because the whole sequence would have proved too expensive. So, and I don't think it's on here. Yeah, another thing is that the time machine originally wasn't a DeLorean.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. It was a refrigerator.
Yes, I did hear that before.
Yeah, that's weird. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I
think they made a good change to that.
Yeah, here's another thing. The final scene, you know, everybody knows this movie because I think this was really the first movie that people watched, and the final scene with the promise of a sequel was ridiculous, right? We didn't expect that. It was like, oh my gosh, right? The final scene originally didn't play out how it does in the film, though. It plays out with Doc turning back up at Marty's house and taking him and Jennifer on another adventure. It originally ended with George looking at a 1955 newspaper with a picture of Marty playing Johnny B. Goode on stage and saying, "It can't be, but it is." So, like, the dad looking at the paper and going, "Oh my gosh, that's my boy," in 1955. So,
which is like, I mean,
we've always wondered that. Okay, let's get real.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, he went back in time. You met him. So then this timeline continues, and you don't realize once he gets to this age that he looks exactly like that fucking kid.
I know. My thing with that has always been, as soon as something happens, right? The future people, like the future father and mother, the memories of what happened and instantly flood into that person, I presume. Like, they all of a sudden start remembering things they weren't there before. That butterfly effect thing, right? And how things can happen. And so my thoughts are, they have to remember seeing this guy that looks just like their son named Marty, that's named Marty, that plays guitar just like their, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
We'll get into that here in a second. In first drafts, Doc Brown had a pet chimp called Shimp. I love this. This is one of my favorite stories from this. This was changed to a pet dog called Einstein at the request of the head of Universal, Sid Sheinberg. Sheinberg told Zemeckis and Gale, "No film with a chimp ever made money." And this is one of my favorites. When Gale responded by saying, "What about Every Which Way But Loose?" Sheinberg said, "That's an orangutan."
There you go. Get out of my office.
Love that movie. So if you want to hear us talk about Every Which Way But Loose, love that movie. It's a classic. Go back and listen to our discussion.
Those are your thoughts, not mine.
Anthony enjoyed it. I mean, everyone's heard the term right turn Clyde, right?
I won't say I enjoyed it.
Which I think actually doesn't happen until the second one, though, strangely. Right turn Clyde. Doesn't happen in the first one, right? Am I right?
I don't fucking remember.
Oh, my God. Oh, I guess I should have used that movie quote.
You should have.
What movie's that from? And then you would have said the wrong one because you don't know.
Fuck you.
Okay,
yeah,
so.
I mean that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I will lube for you. Now, what I want to say is there's some things that we want to talk about. Like I said, I want to talk about our first impression. So I think this is one of those ones where you probably had a first impression. When did you see it?
You know what? It's the thing. Like, I don't remember when I first saw it. I almost feel like I remember, I remember watching this with my cousins. It's one of those movies.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, the house I grew up at, we had a park right across the street from us, and my cousins lived directly on the other side of the park, like straight across from us. So, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I mean, the width of the park was not that. So it's just like, you know, basically like less than a block to walk across it.
Cool.
So I remember, my cousins, it was like the two boys, they were both older than me. So like, you know, when I got to tag along and hang out with them and stuff. So I remember watching it. I feel like, you know, seeing it with my cousins, because my cousins were the ones that like they had gotten a 4-head VCR.
Oh,
bam, Laserdisc player, mind blown. Holy shit. Like all the high tech shit.
The shit. They had all the shit.
But yeah, so they were big into movies. So I remember that's one of the ones watching, you know, with them. And I've seen it obviously like at home with my friends and stuff. It is one of those movies you remember watching like with a lot of different friends.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, you remember watching that movie a lot.
Yeah, I think for me, it was, I remember seeing it on, I didn't see it in a theater, but I know I saw it on HBO when it premiered there. And I remember sitting there because everybody was watching it in the house and it was just pretty big. And I think what's amazing about this movie is at the time it had amazing expectations, what people thought. It was kind of secretive, the whole project. And then when they come out with the whole time travel thing and the DeLorean, we were all like mesmerized by what it could be. And I think this is one of those movies that lives up to the expectations.
Yeah.
Very rarely does a movie, there's a few movies that you go into that blow you away and go beyond the expectations. I'd say this is one of them. I watched Pulp Fiction in the theater. Didn't know what I was getting into, but it blew me away.
I feel like there's so, most movies are going to either disappoint or come out of nowhere and blow your fucking doors off. So yeah. This is very rare in the sense that it does live up to the hype. You're right, because not many movies with that type of hype placed on it are ever going to actually live up to that. Because it's always going to be like, it was good, but kind of thing.
I'd say, you know, think about that. Like another movie I was going to say is The Matrix is another one that blows you away. You go in the theater and you come out, boom, mind is blown.
Yeah.
You're like, right. So, but I'll just say with this is interesting is that you remember like Star Wars and how many people, like most Star Wars movies do not live up to the expectations. They are not as good as what you want them to be, what you would expect them to be. They fall well short.
It just doesn't only, like, matter because that train is already rolling after the first one.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's there's a couple that are really good. And there's, to me, there's only like, The first of the new trilogy was lived up to expectations. And I think the one that went beyond my expectations was Rogue One. Beyond that, you know, and I'm not going to go back to the 70s ones because I was too young, but I'm talking about like more recently. Like that to me, when you think about movies that just blow you away and they have this hype and at the same time that lives up to it, it's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many movies that I can think of that I've said, man, I got to go see that because of the hype. And I went and watched it and go, man, that was great. I mean, F9, mm-hmm. I guess.
Oh, God, shut up. I hate you in ways that I don't even have words for yet. you know, I think another thing about this movie, though, that does make it so great.
Maverick.
I was already going to say Maverick, that I think that is like one of the few that actually lived up to the expectations, and we hadn't seen that in forever.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because Avatar, even those expectations are astronomical based on what they spent to make the fucking movie. So it's got to be one of the highest grossing films ever just to fucking break even. So that doesn't count.
I'm not a fan of Avatar. They're garbage.
Good for you. I liked Avatar. I don't psychotically love it, but I liked it.
I think it'd be a good video game, not a good movie.
Yeah. The ride, the Disney ride was cool.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, video game, a ride. But as a movie, I don't like the concept of jumping in an alien suit and running around and whatnot.
The thing I was going to say, like for Back to the Future, as far as for a time travel movie.
Yeah.
I think it came out at a perfect time because I think I think that's the best you're going to get as far as a time travel movie, especially like a time travel comedy, sci-fi comedy movie, if you will, that is set and takes place in the 80s and comes out in the 80s. Like, that's, to me, like, that makes for the best decade to do a time travel movie.
Yeah.
It really does. Because when you look at another great fucking time travel movie, Hot Tub Time Machine, what makes it great is because they go back to the fucking 80s.
Butterfly effect on that one's amazing.
Butterfly effect is amazing, yes, but in a different vein than these.
Yeah, when you see the second one.
Very fucking serious.
And, you've seen the second one, right?
Yes.
And you learn about all the different strings of time and how many versions of yourself.
And it's fuck, too much.
It takes you on a mind trip that just doesn't have to happen. But no, I agree.
I think you can't, you're never going to replicate that, and you can't do better. Because like now, I mean, you could still do a time travel movie and set it in the 80s, but it's like at that time, like, I don't think that's never going to be able to happen again.
Here's my thoughts on that. And I was going to say this movie by itself is probably, it isn't dated by itself. This movie, it starts in 85, looks 85, goes back to 55, absolutely, and comes back. Everything about this movie, which that's what makes this particular Back to the Future timeless. Mm-hmm. Then now, once we get into the next ones, the second one anyways, it gets put on an egg timer because they went into the future and things weren't the way they were. I always hate really, that.
See, I don't think it does, though, because you got Miami had a baseball team.
Well, I know. We're not going to get into all that, how many things it got wrong.
The best, though, in part two, which I know we're skipping ahead, even though we're going to do that movie.
Yeah, we are.
Wild Gunman, the scene. You have to use your hands?
Yeah.
It's like a kid's game.
Yeah, but my thing is that when you look at this movie by itself, I think is timeless in a way that the other ones couldn't be. You know, that's just how it is. I think the third one is more timeless than the second one because it goes way back and it comes back to 1985, right? So,
yeah.
There's that. So, yeah, I think, well, time travel movies, and I think you're right, it's the perfect time because up to that time, we had The Time Machine, which wasn't a great movie. It was okay. You had Terminator. You had, what is it, what's the one with Ice Pirates? What's the one where they went in the time travel with Sean Connery? There's that one. You know, so the time travel just wasn't a Lin Swan. The motorcycle one, mm-hmm. or not Lin Swan, what's his name?
Time Cop.
Time Rider, the movie Time Rider. Time Cop came after this movie. So,
yes, I know.
But I'm talking about before this movie, your time travel movies were kind of eh, you know? They weren't executed well. They lacked imagination. They didn't suck you in and into it like this does. It didn't make you feel like you could be in that world. Like, it could happen to you, right? Like,
I think
other ones don't do that.
But it's always much more feasible to have a time travel movie that you don't go into the future.
Much easier.
You're in the present and you're in the past because it's a lot easier to replicate what was going on and to write that story. Because
you know,
once you go in the future, it's hit or miss.
Have you seen the movie Interstellar?
A long time ago.
With Matthew McConaughey, it's brilliant.
I was fucking thinking Interspace when you said that.
No, Interspace is not a time travel movie.
Yes, Interstellar. Yes, I saw that.
But Interstellar, you know, they kind of mess with time when they go into the black hole, and he's able and they say the fifth dimension or whatever it's called is all time happening at once, but it's only in the one room, his daughter's room or something like that. So he could see all time. He didn't travel in time, but he could see time, and it could only go backwards, I think, is what the whole thing was. And he could only manipulate in the past. So, you know, like, when you look at those rules, that those were based on, theoretically, what they think could really happen in that movie. So I wonder if just, you know, in our subconscious, we're like, oh, well, it makes more sense that you could go back than you could go forward. Because it's easier to go to something that's already happened and has already existed.
Happened. Yeah.
Than it is to go to something that isn't there. Because when you think about it, you're just going to a place into the future.
It's made up.
Yeah. That's right. So it's something like this,
it's like you've got the fun of the 80s, what's going on. But then you've got, for other people, nostalgia of the 50s.
You got to remember the 80s, that was, Because remember, we just had American Graffiti. We just had Grease. You know, the 50s nostalgia was hard because those people were the ones raising us. You know, those people that lived, or our grandparents anyways, those people lived in the 50s and had a good time. And I think that's what it was. It captured both groups. It captured us and our grandparents and parents because they lived those decades. And I think that was the big thing. It sucked them in. And I like that. I do like that. That's an amazing, it's an amazing thing. Now I want to go into the time travel rules. What do you think the time travel rules are in Back to the Future? It seems that...
Don't look at your parents.
Yeah, don't talk to your parents. Well, I mean, with Doc, it's don't mess with anything, talk to anyone. Don't
touch anything. Because
it could change the future.
This, I think, here's what I think. Doc Brown's time travel rules are the same as Cameron's dad's house rules. It's very cold and very beautiful, and you're not allowed to touch anything.
Yeah, you know, that's so true. I agree. It's just not allowed to touch anything, man. But the thing I have is when he does meet his mother and they finally talk about it, the brother's head starts erasing from existence. So what I love about the movie is that it tells us how the rules are, right? It says this is what's going to happen unless these things change. And it puts us on the ticking time clock to where he's going to start erasing at some point. Now, I don't know why they race one at a time and not all at the same time. Not here to judge that. But
oh, wait, no. If you think about it this way, he was the oldest. So he was.
Oh, yeah.
Been,
so the opportunity for the first youngest.
To go, that opportunity. Yes.
I get that. I just thought of that before you said it. But the problem is that's not how time would work, right? Because if they're not together, it doesn't matter which one of you is oldest or youngest. If they're not together, none of
you. I think it's more if you think about
potential reality.
Yes, the chance is slipping away. Is it still possible that it could happen later in a different way? Sure. If George decides to go bird watching again, maybe.
Now I have a tweak on that I would like to. So would you think it would have been better if the way it was done is that Marty, because he is outside of time now, everyone else wouldn't be alive, but Marty would be a man outside of time and not have a place to go back to if he didn't fix the relationship?
See, that then you're getting all Interstellar on me again.
You know what? You're right. They made it simple. The regular masses could understand it. You didn't have to watch theoretical physics shows or anything like that.
When you get into that shit, you're limiting your audience a little bit.
But I think now you could do that. Then you couldn't, because you got to remember the amount of knowledge that's available to you now that you didn't have then, and the level that people think at because they watch so much shit is different, right? So I think back then, much simpler thinkers, we weren't contemplating that, and we weren't watching 8,000 streaming shows about different types of scenarios that could maybe broaden our horizon.
We were basically cavemen in the 80s.
Cavemen, but in some ways. Yeah.
It's like, we land on the moon, and that's about all we've done so far.
We haven't even landed on the moon since 1960, so I don't even want to go there.
I'm saying, in the 80s,
or 70s.
That's what we can hang our hat on. And it's like aliens probably visited us 5 billion times since then.
Yeah. So the rules of time travel, you're okay with them in this movie?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right.
Keep it simple.
Now, I want to go into a six-pack because we're not following the movie very literally. But at the beginning of the movie, one of my favorite things that becomes a gag in the movie is when Doc Brown has Marty come out to the mall. And I like how the mall is named Twin Pines Mall.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's named Lone Pine Mall.
Yep.
That's a really, that's a good gag, you know, and that's something that I didn't see the first time I watched it. That's how good, you know, a good movie does that to you.
I don't think that's anything a lot of people noticed the first time they watched it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
Lone Pines! Take that, you mutated son of a bitch!
Yeah, but you know, right after that, or when he, that I told you, strangely, the There is one time that beer is shown in this movie, a beer truck. Did you watch it again?
Yeah,
to see it?
Yeah.
When he comes around the corner, when he first gets to the downtown Hill Valley, and it's right there behind him next to the Texaco. So I thought that was interesting. I wondered if they paid for that placement back in the day to
maybe
have that there. I didn't realize that for years because I didn't care. You know, I think that's the thing about movies. You know, I guess there are people who would notice that who probably go a little too deep on it. Like some people are probably so obsessed with this, they've looked at every frame.
I'm sure they are, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And they look at everything in every frame and try to dissect it. And we're not that type of people. But when we do watch them, if we notice things we didn't see before, we're going to point it out. Yeah,
right.
That's just how it is. So, yeah, I never really noticed the Miller Lite truck there before.
You know what?
Or Miller truck.
I'm just going to rip through my six packs here since we're doing this one a little bit differently.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just because I've got, because this one actually, to me, what I do like about this movie too is it's really easy to pick out your six packs because you remember this movie, you've seen it so many times, and you know what your favorite things are. So number one for me is the DeLorean.
Okay, I
to this day, okay, when you see celebrities, athletes driving around fucking Lambos and Maybachs and all shit, I don't know how anybody rich as shit wouldn't just be cruising around a fucking DeLorean all day, all night.
That's the
car you should want. And there is no substitute.
Custom make it, have someone put a different engine in it, all that stuff. Yeah, I'd do that in a second.
My other six pack is the Huey Lewis cameo. I fucking still love that.
You're too loud.
You're just too darn loud.
Playing his music.
And then my other thing is Marty and his skateboard.
Yeah.
All the skateboard tricks. Like, I mean, that made you want to go out and accidentally kill yourself. Hanging
on
cars and doing all this shit. And then when he does the kick and flips it up and he catches it, it's just awesome.
Do you know who actually did all the skateboarding tricks in the movie?
Crispin Glover?
No.
Danny Glover?
Tony Hawk.
Did he? I didn't know that. That's
Tony Hawk was the
skateboarder. That is awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah, something you didn't know, right? Am I good or what? There you go.
No,
but Tony Hawk, he was the stunt skateboarder guy who did all the stuff where he held onto the truck and, you know, all that stuff. So that's interesting. He's had an interesting career, hasn't he? When you think, well, you know, and that's the other thing. When you look at this franchise, I know that's in this, you know, there are people in here who are a part of that. And I think Flea is another one, or basically the Red Hot Chili Peppers are in here. So eventually. So there you go. Just interesting careers that people had. Now, I'm going to give you my second six pack since you did that. And me, it's Christopher Lloyd. Because when I watched this again the last couple days, I watched it a couple times. I think he carries the movie in a lot of ways. Michael J. Fox is good, but boy, when Christopher Lloyd is on the scene, everything he does is important to how we get to where we need to go. And he does it well.
See,
I love his character.
I only half agree with that. I think the combination of Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd are what carried the movie, that duo. I don't know if you're going to mention this, but I think most people know that originally Michael J. Fox was not going to be in this movie.
I wasn't going to, but we can. Eric Stoltz.
And Eric Stoltz, they first started shooting the movie with Eric Stoltz, and it just was not fucking working. And Michael
J.
Fox was doing Family Ties.
Can I tell you why I learned this? I was reading it, and I was going to go into this fact, but I didn't do it. But I can now. Eric Stoltz, when they were talking to him and they're trying to get him to be funnier on it, he said to him, "Why would I do that? This is the most depressing situation a teenage boy could be in. He's lost his family. He's out. He's in a different time, and everybody's going to die. It's, you know," he says, "it's depressing." So that's why when he was doing it, he was doing it more from a place of desperation and wasn't fitting with the lightheartedness they were going with because he was too heavy with it. Because he saw it as a different character. And you know, there are people that thought he saw it correctly. Like, if this really happened, this isn't some flippant thing that,
he did,
you know,
the, what would you do in that situation if that happened to you? And
yeah.
Michael J. Fox listened to the fucking director. So.
And Eric Stoltz was like method with it. Was like, this is doomsday, man. I'm about to fucking die.
This is why Shia LaBeouf would not work in Back to the Future. So he would have gone too fucking method.
What? Would you want to see Eric Stoltz though? Version of this, because they did film a lot of scenes
right now. Shia LaBeouf would have killed Einstein and ate him to stay alive. That would have been his thought. This is what I need to do to stay alive. I got to kill the dog.
Yeah.
I got to cook him on top of the fucking flux capacitor and eat him.
I think they should release the Eric Stoltz cut. That's all I'm saying. But no, Christopher Lloyd, well,
they showed scenes. I mean, they didn't shoot that much of it with him for this.
They did more than you know. That's all I'm going to say. I looked it up. But they did more than you know. They just never put it together cohesively because you got to understand what people don't understand about movies is they don't shoot them linear. They shoot them out of sequence.
Yes, I know this.
So you might be doing the ending the first week you're on set.
Then shave your head and then finish it.
Yeah. 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 So
I just wanted to finish. Like, I think it is more the duo of Marty and Doc Brown because. I mean, like, when you really think about it, it's like when you go back to some of the best, like, character duos throughout film history.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What are some of the top ones that come to mind and how many would you put over them?
Butch and Sundance.
They're like right up there.
I'd put Butch and Sundance over them.
Okay. I'm saying. I mean, yes, I know you wouldn't. Clint Eastwood in the fucking orangutan.
No, I get it. No. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is a brilliant movie with Robert Redford and Paul Newman. Mm-hmm. Suggest everyone watches that if you're going to watch one Western in your life, that or Tombstone.
This is like Maverick and Goose, you know?
Yeah. Duos, Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Right,
and,
there you go.
Lethal Weapon. The buddy cop Gilbert genre. And Lewis. What?
Gilbert and Lewis.
Yeah, who's what? Gilbert and Lewis on what?
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to do Revenge of the Nerds eventually. And there's too much rape in that movie and stuff. Now that we look back at it. Back then, we laughed. We loved it.
Well, it didn't take her long to come around either after that.
No. We'll get to that. You know, there's so many things. The duos, the great duos, Han and Chewie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is up there. You know what I mean?
I would say, this one is a pretty good one because, you know, as we all know, the show Rick and Morty is loosely based on on that. So it lives on, its imprint on pop culture lives on pretty well. I think people who've never seen Back to the Future know who Doc Brown is. And I think people will be watching this movie 30 years from now still and being mesmerized by it in some way. Even with its...
Oh, they would. Because as soon as you're like, who the hell would wear a jean jacket with a life preserver?
Yeah.
Who came up with that look? And yet he wanted to wear it.
but you know, the people will be watching this, even with its special effects not being quite up, because it doesn't have enough of them that it ruins it. That's the key.
You're right. I think the other thing with this too, though, as opposed to a lot of the other duos you named, it's weird because you, like, normally... You don't think of a teenage kid, his best friend being a scientist twice his age.
No, but...
You know, the dynamic is strange, but it works.
And you know, there's the story that we never got, really. The backstory of how did he end up coming around, because he's not a great student, it seems. Like, it doesn't seem like not bad, but it doesn't seem like it's his number one...
He cares about music.
He's like, he's another thing. So makes me wonder how, and then how does he meet a girl that looks as hot as what's her name? And has his only friend that he hangs out with, it seems, is Doc Brown. I don't know. What kind of date is that? Hey, we're going to double date with the doc.
Yeah.
Oh, but I want to get my final six pack because we've already kind of went over this. And my final six pack was the simple explanation of how time travel works in this movie. Like, from how, like I told you, the butterfly effect works to as simple as how Doc Brown shows push this date here, push this date here, boom. We know the mechanics of this movie so well that we're able to just live in the movie and not have to think too much about it. And I think that is the beauty of Back to the Future. I think that is the number one thing. If you could, like we were talking about, something digestible for the masses, this was it.
But
we were able to.
I know, it's just saying the flux capacitor is what makes time travel possible. But then we don't have to get into exactly how.
Who gives a shit? You got to put 1.22 gigawatts in it.
America. We said so.
That's it.
That's all.
That's all. And you got, it just needs power. That's all.
I mean, Doc Brown, all of his other inventions. I mean, he's he's basically like the dad in Gremlins. All of his
a
other
better version, though. A better version.
All he's of his other no, I'm shit. Saying all of his other inventions suck, basically.
Ah, that Rube Goldberg machine at the beginning is kind of cool that feeds the dog. Right. If the dog is home.
If the dog is home and eats.
Yes.
If not, this is what you get.
Turn that shit off. But yeah, and he had a lot of clocks. And do you think he was obsessed with time prior to the flux capacitor? Or do
because
you think he was hanging a clock? He was hanging a clock when
he fell and hit his head.
So it makes me wonder, was that already an obsession, or did that trigger an obsession, and that's why he had all the clocks in his workshop? That's what I don't understand. That's why I said there's no backstory to how these people got to where they're at.
It might have triggered it, because he was hanging a clock, and that's, you know, bam, hit your head and flux capacitor. So at that point, that was like his focus after that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to have a brilliant idea like that would be amazing
for the next 30 years.
I mean, come knock me the shit out of me, Anthony. I want to see if I can think of something awesome.
Okay.
And then I'll hit you. We'll see if you can think of something. Nah, yeah, you want a great. You need some great fucking ideas too. Come on.
I keep trying to find a new co-host, but nobody's volunteered yet. I do have great ideas.
No. Well, okay. Well,
it's not my fault. I'm stuck here with you.
Whatever. So this movie's pretty awesome. There's not a lot of low points in it, but there are a couple. For me, I have one. I don't know if your generic's going to be the same as mine.
Go ahead.
I have one generic, and really, and I hate to say it, it's Biff. And I don't mean the character as much as it's the acting. I thought it was very... When you get the honest performances you do by everyone else in this movie, when Biff speaks, it does not feel as natural as everyone else. It feels really put on. It feels kind of fake. You know, it just never felt as natural to me ever. Like, it always felt like there was something a little off.
Yeah.
What about you?
See, I kind of feel like that's what he was going for, though.
Well, I get that.
You think about it, like, be a douchebag in the 50s. Okay. Like, where do you get the inspiration for that? Like, you know what I mean?
You could be like, you could go more for Greaser, you know, a different mode. You don't have to be like, so like, 'cause he sounds dumb and we're going to do the other ones. And I think when you see the second one, I think you get a different idea of Biff than you do in the first one. You know what I mean? Like, how does a guy come from what he is in the first one to where he is as an old man when you see him there, a little more wise, you know?
Yeah.
He just seems too dumb and too oafish. That's just my opinion. I feel there's a balance there. It's slightly off. And then I'm not, now, people, this is nitpicking because it's not like I don't like the character in general. It's not like I watch it and go, oh, fuck this character. I hate this movie. I got to turn it off.
Love Biff.
Yeah. But it's just, if you were to say, man, what would you make better? I would somehow figure out a way to balance that, how he is.
I don't think
naturalness.
Biff is like O'Doyle to me.
Yeah, but O'Doyle's good when you see them in that one moment for a second, putting somebody in a trash can and then going, O'Doyle rules with walking off. He says a lot more lines than that. And that's what I'm trying to say. It becomes a little less natural if you go all O'Doyle rules all day long. There has to be a balance. And I just feel that there's something missing there. That's all.
I don't know. I think he's just, he's just a dumb bully.
I agree that he's a dumb bully.
And that's all you get out of it.
A little different. I don't know.
I think that's fine because that you don't really... See, I think if you get too much into that character, it could change the dynamic he has with other people. It also could change how you feel about him getting his truck or his car filled with shit.
I have one for you. The guy who plays Shooter McGavin.
Yeah.
He plays a bully asshole naturally so well that I believe that's who he is and it doesn't feel out of place. That's the kind of thing I would like. If he played this character, probably would have been very natural. probably would have been very natural. That's what I'm saying. I think there's something there that there is a way to make that work. I just, you know, I'm not saying it's, like I said, I still love the movie, love the guy. It's just a little
you
off.
You think somebody else could have done better?
I think there could have been a better performance.
Okay.
There could have been.
So my generic, it's not like generic, like, you know, the scene sucked or anything. Like, you shouldn't have had that in the movie, which is usually where our generics come from typically.
Yeah.
But I had to find out something. Like, I was thinking about what would I consider to be kind of a generic scene. And I thought of something for this reason. For it's when Marty's mom finally kisses him in the car.
Yeah, like she forces herself. She kind of sexually assaults him. Yeah, go ahead. But
the reason I'd say this is generic, because I thought about it watching it as a kid. It really leaves some fucking conflicting thoughts for young boys watching this. Because you're like, you know, I was at that age where I was liking girls and stuff. And I'm like, so wait a second. I was supposed to kiss your mom. But what if my mom is Leah Thompson?
Like, Thompson is like,
which actually kind of goes back to their fucking whole impetus for this movie. What would happen if my mom wanted to do me back in time?
You know, that's, you could almost say that is the generic, is the Oedipal nature of the movie, and how that is the thing that drives the plot for this one, which I don't have a problem with that, but you're right. It's strange that whole kiss thing. He was already going to get handsy with her, which felt kind of weird too, right? Like, he was already going to be a little rough and handsy with her so that George would have
someone. Didn't need to.
Yeah. She was all down DTF, right? So it was a strange. What would you do? Okay. So when we look at the timelines of Back to the Future and how that time works in Back to the Future, it's a little more gross because we know that the time is very linear in Back to the Future, and then what happens right there directly affects what happens later.
Right.
So it would be really weird to have sex with your mother or do anything strange like that.
Now, if Marty did have sex with her, is John Connor born? We don't know.
We don't know. That's what I say. It's very, very weird. Now, if time were like other theorists say, and it's strings, and so, for example, Marty has sex with her, and all of a sudden there's a separate timeline where he still exists because he's on his string where she falls in love with George, but now there's a new string where doing a thing.
Let me
throw
this.
Weird.
Yeah. Marty goes back in time, has sex with her, but did not know it was his mother.
That, you know, that they, you know, they bandied that about. You know, that was part of the original pitch.
No, that's his mom.
You know, I'm 100,000% sure that when Gale and Zemeckis are sitting there and they outline that third thing, they said that it first was his mother falls in love with him and they have sex unbeknownst to her that he's the son, right?
Right.
Like, you know, that was the thing. And they said, well, I don't know that Hollywood would go for that. Of course, they didn't see the movie Lolita.
I don't know if Vivid Entertainment would go for that. That's a little too much.
Really, really bizarre. I don't know the whole Oedipal nature of it. I just think I get it. I think it's a simple understanding for us to go, oh, I wouldn't want to have sex with my mother. So I can see why he's trying to get George to fall in love with her.
If my mother was Leah Thompson, what do you do?
I agree, but he's wingmanning his father to get laid. Think about that. We're always forgetting that part too. Really, the whole thing is he's trying to get him laid on the Enchantment Under the Sea dance night. That's really what I think is happening here.
So then that makes it very weird to think about. You only had sex with your wife because your son got you two together to make sweet love. Wow.
Now,
we never would have had sex if it wasn't for our son.
Yeah, and I want to think about this. So it's 1955 when they meet there, and it's 1985, and Marty's about 18 years old. That's 30 years in between. So they didn't have Marty till they were in their 30s. And that was rare for back then. to wait to have children, because they were pretty tightly put together. I think one was like, in his 20s, like early 20s, yeah, 23. I think they were, I think, you know, when you think about that, back 23 years, it was 1962. So yeah, they were like nearly 30 when they probably had their first kid, which, you know, now is normal. But in back then, when you got married, it was like ding, 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 spitting out kids, right? So just a different, weird. What are you looking up, man? He's looking something up.
Just doing the math. Let's just say, how old do you think they were?
I think Marty was not 17. Marty.
No, let's say.
I think the sister was 18 or 19, and I think the brother was like 23,
22. No. I ain't talking. Well, oh, so having the first kid. So let's say. I'm saying, how old do you think George and Lorraine were in high school? 17?
17, yes, correct.
So 17, then plus 30 years. And then you said the oldest was 23?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
So minus 23, they would have been 24 when they had their first kid.
Oh, okay. That's not bad. I thought they were nearly 30.
I got to do the math.
Yeah, they're 17, 18, then that makes sense. They just, I guess maybe when I see them, we know that they're way older than that. When you look at them, you're just thinking, man, these people that look about 25 going to be like 40 in 20
years.
Yeah,
and you know what? The oldest son, we don't know how old he was. He could have been older. He could have been 25, 26, because he was also more of the oldest son living at home that shouldn't have been living at home at this point.
Yeah, well, we don't know. Yeah. So, but I think he was, yeah. So, yeah. Well, she was class of 84, so she would have been 19. I was right. She would have been 19, probably 18 or 19 in 84.
Depending on when her birthday 85. Was, yes.
85, yeah. So, yeah, man, it just felt weird. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, that whole having kids.
And you also, you got to think of this too. George McFly was a very slow mover. He wasn't very deliberate. So it might have taken him quite a while to get to third base after they started dating.
But after he punches Biff, you see some confidence in him. You do. And when he gets on the dance floor and does the kiss, we see a different George. And obviously when we get back to the future, we see that different George, who's a little more playful, a little different. So I'm guessing he went to college with and still stayed with her. And I think they had a great relationship. I think that in this particular version of the...
After Marty fixed it, yeah.
After Marty fixed it. Which is very interesting how these movies work. Like, everything is fixed at that point because of Marty. And then when you get into the second movie, it really just tries to fuck all that up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's when, I mean, and that's with the sequel, it's like, okay, we did this, we did it great, but what do we do now? Because we've got to screw stuff up, we got to make it better, find a problem, yeah. Yo, I'll solve it.
That's, you know, I told you I was watching Die Hard with a Vengeance. Remember, I told you, I think it's one of the better sequels of all time. Because I think at that time, it became, Die Hard was more popular than it was after Die Hard 2, I think,
yeah.
After that movie. And I think, you know, in a way, Back to the Future is, while it's a great, one of the greatest trilogies ever, I don't think the sequels are anywhere near as good as the first one.
Well, it's
none of them elevate it again.
You can't. There's no way to improve on that after the story that you had and what you did the first one. And then on top of it, the second one, it's like, you really have no choice but to go into the future.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You can't do the past again, because then it's going to be a rehash, and no matter what the issue, it's like you've got to go into the future, and then that's where you run into trouble.
I agree. You do run into trouble. You do run into trouble. Is there anything else in this movie?
Everybody to this day is still bitching, why don't I have a hoverboard?
Yes, everyone does bitch about not having a hoverboard, but physics, my friends, is the reason you don't have a hoverboard. It just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, but
laws of science don't allow.
Where's my hoverboard? I'm like, where's my fucking time machine?
Well, technically,
hoverboard.
I want to say this. Those people who do that weird water jet board thing on the water, you know, when they go out there, that's kind of like hoverboarding, but that's like on water and it's not, you know, not anywhere near.
Hydroboarding.
Yeah. Hydroboarding, yes. So, you know, a couple of things. I want to make sure we touch on a few of the more important things in this movie. the flux capacitor and having to get the lightning to strike. Did you ever think that that was too precarious? Like, how did they, could you really have timed it that way? How did you know?
You could have well, they knew because of the flyer said what time lightning struck.
Specifically.
But so, even then, it's like, if you're off by a half a second sliding down that thing, forget, you know, hitting
although electricity, although I was thinking about that, and you notice how, I don't know if you know anything about televisions, old ones specifically.
The big box ones?
Yeah, they had a place in it, a box, that you weren't allowed to open or touch because it held 10,000 volts or some crazy shit.
Yep.
At all times, even when it's unplugged. So I was thinking maybe the way the doc built it, he was able to, not forever, but he was able to store the power for just a moment so that there could be a little lead time between when it came down. So I always thought that would, could it be explainable.
I got a question. Why didn't they, now this actually makes me go back to Ferris Bueller again.
Ferris Bueller, yeah.
When they had the car lifted up to try to take the miles off, why didn't they just lift up the DeLorean, have it running to be at 88 miles an hour, and just have it already hooked up? Now, I know we had all the things going on with him having to get the thing around the clock tower and all that shit. Why didn't you just hook this up earlier, put the DeLorean up on fucking blocks, and just have the wheels spinning? It's going 88 miles an hour. This lightning hits, bam, you're home.
I think Doc would say you needed the forward inertia of some sort.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. But you're right. If the car just needed to be going 88 miles an hour, yes. I think we found the fly in that ointment. There Why is that not a thing? Yeah. Man, way to spoil a movie.
I know. I fucking ruined it.
Way to spoil a movie with that. Yeah. Man, you're awful. Now, the diner, I want to say this. Did you notice? Go ahead.
I'm trying to remember now, too, now that I think about it. Didn't that actually, I'm trying to remember, in part three, didn't something come up like that with the train?
May have, but when we get to part three, we'll talk about that. We're going to do that movie, and we'll talk about it. If we find the thing that we're talking about,
it might be.
We'll come back to it. But you got me off my train of thought, you asshole. Oh, the diner. The diner. Did you notice at the beginning when he's going by and he's holding on to the truck, the diner, there's a bunch of people doing aerobics in it?
Yes.
Yeah. I always find that interesting how they did show the differences between things in the past as the way they were in the present. Like the theater being a porn theater instead of a regular theater.
And now it's like you don't have that because instead of aerobics, everybody's just sitting there on fucking Pelotons.
Yeah, just Pelotoning.
Looking at the screen. They don't even see Marty going by waving because they're looking at
the screen. CrossFit. It's a CrossFit place. That's what it is. It's CrossFit.
Shadow boxing.
Yeah. So just some interesting little things there. I don't know if I'm trying to think of other things we may have missed that were just pretty cool. That I think that's about it.
Mr. Fusion at the end.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Fusion. Well, yeah, the Mr. Fusion. At the end, like I said, probably the greatest ending to a movie ever with the promise of a sequel. Because when you have a movie that great and they promise you a sequel, I mean, you're like, oh, my gosh. You know, sequel never lives up to it. But you have that hope, right? At that moment when you first saw that, it was like, oh, my God. And then you see him just throwing shit into the Mr. Fusion. You're like, oh, well, that improved that.
Good job, Doc. I think that's the other thing too with the second and the third, you know, whether you love them as much or not is another thing that it was like actually awesome that they did, that they released them so close to each other that you didn't have to fucking wait forever.
The third one was a little farther out.
I don't think so.
I thought it
didn't come out long after the second one relative to how long it usually takes a sequel to come out.
I guess. I mean, I thought it was, now you're making me look it up. Cause I thought it was in the '90s. Back to the Future 3 came out in the '90s. I thought. And in 1990. So
right,
5 years.
Part 2 came out in 89.
And the first one came out in 1985. So
exactly. That's what I'm
those
saying.
Two movies came out tight, but the
that's,
first one,
that's what I'm saying. This between the second and the third one.
And I think that's probably what did it to, when you think about it, we're going to go into this in the other ones, but the time it took between 85 and 89, I think we expected more than what we probably got out of it. Our expectations rose, right? Because
right.
we just saw the greatest fucking thing we've ever seen on screen. And then, you know, if we don't see the greatest fucking thing we've ever seen on screen for the second one, we're not as happy. That's just how it is.
6 months apart.
Yeah.
Between 2 and 3.
Yeah, 2 and 3. And they probably should have held those out a little bit, but, you know, but whatever.
I don't think so, because I think, especially after the second one, you could have lost some steam. Because we
went and just kept the steam up. I get what you're saying. The first one. Yeah. Anyways, but that, we love this movie. We love everything about it. And we're going to go into the other two a lot deeper. We go deep. Was there anything that we missed on this one that I'm just...
I'm sure there was stuff we missed. There's plenty of funny parts and everything.
Yeah.
Just random stuff. Like, George, like, I still, in the beginning... What, Lorraine? Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Ask him a question. That reaction is
asking. Well, no. I think he did that on purpose because she asked him about what he was doing, and we all know that's what I forgot to mention. That's the fucking weirdness of this family. We've got the Oedipal nature of her falling in love with him, and then we got the weird ass fucking George McFly, who we don't know this is the only person he did this with.
We don't know that.
Climbing a tree and peeping into her window to see her in her underwear.
I'm going to pretend it was the only one.
And he was just so in love with her only. Mm-hmm. And how did he not know later on when Marty says, you know, Lorraine, you know? So was he just randomly looking at her?
I'm going to also say, if I was going to pick out another generic, it's like, what are you doing in the middle of the fucking day in a tree that is not a well-hidden tree? It's on the street, climbing up, peeping. And then what's she doing getting naked in the middle of the day?
You know what? Some of us live a different life.
We're not even getting naked. She's got that halter fucking bra thing going on. That
old school bra. Yeah. Back then. Because they didn't have underwire then, I don't believe.
Granny bra.
That's not granny. They just didn't have underwire, so they have more fabric underneath for support.
That's granny.
So, hey, whatever, man. Just deal. So anyways, that is our thing. I think that's one thing we did miss was that. But what time it is.
Time, memorabilia.
Yeah.
What you want.
This, I don't know. This is a tough one.
It is because,
you know what though? I think I'm going to go weird on this one.
Okay.
Because there's so many obvious things that you would want from this. You know, everybody wants the DeLorean.
The DeLorean, the life preserver.
You know, Walkman, all that shit.
The Walkman. That'd be a good one.
But what nobody ever wants
is
Doc Brown's mind reading machine.
That's pretty cool.
The one that he wears and sticks on Marty's head. That's what I would want. And everybody that comes to my house, I'd want to stick it. Don't say anything.
Oh, I'm saying you didn't go for the guitar too.
Guitar would be cool, or the amp, but I think the mind reading machine, because it would be so curious and cool looking in your collection.
I actually will say, obviously there's plenty of shit from this movie I'd be happy to own. If I'd be like, I could have that. Oh, cool. I'll actually say I'm going to go for this because I think it's very underrated. Marty's alarm clock.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I do like that.
Flashback to it at the end too.
I was thinking the flyer too. Maybe.
Flyer. I was just literally about to say that too. The flyer.
But you want to know what the thing is? I told you I think would be a great
flyer. The flyer, if it had the phone number and "I love you" written on it from Jennifer.
Yeah.
That okay, would be awesome.
But the one thing I always said, I was talking with my wife earlier before around Halloween. I was thinking, you know, it'd be a great costume if someone was committed to it, be to dress up like that lady who walks around with the little can and the flyers.
Save the clock tower. That would be great. It'd
be real committed.
I was just going to say, that'd be another great piece of memorabilia too, is actual collection can.
The exact
change, including the quarter that Marty put in there.
Save the clock tower. Yeah. I'll say, if someone's committed enough and walked around all night doing that, that would be like.
I think that's another thing I think that speaks to this movie and the impact it had. Like literally the fact that there's so many different pieces of paraphernalia that you would like to own from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's so a lot of movies we're struggling to think of one thing that we'd really want.
Yeah, we didn't even see the camcorder, which would be cool.
The fucking I'll tell you, the camcorder.
Or the plutonium.
The fucking empty Miller Lite can that Biff takes out of the fridge, even. All you got for me is a light beer?
You know, Miller Lite, though, funny enough, I don't think that was around until 1975.
What?
Miller Lite.
Okay.
And don't ask me why I know this.
You know, what's funny is that they actually, that style of can they brought back because that's what they use now because it's a better looking can. Because they used to do the...
Yeah. Miller Lite was 1975. So it's weird that... So that is a glaring problem in the movie. Now I'm going to have to change.
Glaring problem?
Well, because the movie was set in 1955 and you can't have Miller Lite in 1955 if it wasn't introduced until 1975.
Miller Lite, the can, that was in 1985.
Oh, 1985.
Showed up I thought you were saying he had the car towed and he got a beer out of it.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of... Oh, yeah.
After he wrecked the car, he spilled beer all over his jacket.
That's true. Yeah, that was good. Oh, man, light beer. Light beer from Miller. That's it. That is all of our memorabilia. Did you want to rate this thing up? Let's
rate it up.
All right, go for it.
I'm not even going to get into a big spiel about this because, like, to me, if you can't give this a 24, you don't like movies. What the fuck? I'm not even going to purposely try to take points off of this for anything. Like, it's fucking 24. It just is. It just is. Am I going to, you know, there's other movies that I would watch ahead of this, like if I was going to pick out a movie to watch for the night. But at the same time, would I ever say no to watching Back to the Future? No.
Okay. I got a question for you. I'll get my review in a second. Okay, if you were doing a double feature and you have Back to the Future, what other movie you want to watch with it? Not one of the, but it can't be one of the other Back to the Future franchises movies.
Like, would I want to watch with it?
Yeah, like if you had to watch back to back, you were going to go watch two movies tonight. One of them was Back to the Future. What would the other one be?
You get mean like what would I want to watch pair alongside with that?
Yeah, paired with it. The Terminator? Back to back. Yeah.
Other than the Terminator?
I mean, you can watch that. I guess is that your pairing?
My shitty version of time travel. I'm trying to think now. Let's see. I almost feel like if I was doing Back to the Future, I'd almost have to pair it with a John Hughes movie.
I could see that. I was thinking, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking Back to the Future and like Ferris Bueller or something like
this
that.
This is like wine pairing.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, well, but if you, let's say you go Michael J. Fox, you could go Back to the Future and like Teen Wolf, you know, that would be a good pairing too. Yeah. So.
Teen Wolf isn't one I want to throw on that often, so...
No. You're right. But the next time you walk Back to the Future, you wouldn't pair it with Teen Wolf. You'd pair it with something else.
If I was going to pair a Michael J. Fox movie with this, I would do Secret of My Success.
Good movie. Yes. Yes, that's a good movie.
So, yeah, like, if you want to get into the Michael J. Fox mood and do, a double MJF feature, I think Secret of My Success.
Whitfield. Where's Whitfield?
Nosebleed, dry heat, get them all the time.
Anyways, I got to go to my review. So, Anthony's right. This is probably the most perfect movie that was made in the 80s. I don't know of another one that was made this well. Now, there are better artistic movies, like, say, Raging Bull with Robert De Niro. You know, there was the Born on the 4th of July. You know, you had those, Platoon. You had some great movies in the 80s that were different types. But when you think, everybody can get in the car and go watch a movie and have the greatest time they've had at the movies in the 80s. There's only one movie that does that, really, in my opinion. Now, I could take away probably a quarter of a point for Biff, for me personally. But I'm not going to do it at a risk of being castrated by my co-host.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, hold on. As far as Biff's stiffness, I guess, you would kind of... If you didn't have him acting that way, you do not ever get the level of awesomeness when he says, make like a tree and get out of here, that you get from that line.
I think the way he plays that
leads up to making that fucking perfect.
But my point is, it's a 24 all day long, and there's nothing that could stop that. It will never change. There's nothing that you could show me in this movie later on that would say, this is not a perfect movie.
Yeah.
If you start telling me, well, when they did this shot here, they slightly had this thing in frame that shouldn't be there. And if you notice it for this split moment, you know, that's not going to knock points off. I still have a great time every time I watch it. And I could watch this movie right now and be entertained. Like if it was on, I could watch it and I would, You know, like I wouldn't go, do I want to sit through it? No, I'd sit through it. I'd watch the fucking movie.
That's our first perfect score around the table.
Yeah, that's our first. I knew that. What's our second best movie of all time?
Second best of all time?
Second highest rated movie of all time. What is just below this?
I'm just kind of going through here. Office Space was 22.
That's a great fucking movie.
Fast Times.
I mean, that's a banger from beginning to end.
21 and a half.
It's a great movie.
Big, not as good as this. 21 and a half. That was a 24 for you.
Yeah, Big is really good. The only thing I can say, and what you bring it down for, is the weirdness of that relationship.
Which is also something we have in a
isn't that strange?
In this
isn't
movie.
That strange? Yeah. Maybe I like it. I don't know.
We both accept the weirdness in this one is what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back in time to do an older lady, as long as it's your mom, it's okay. Is basically what we're saying. If she's not related to you, it's fucking gross and weird.
Although Big is not really a time travel movie. It's a...
Let's, strange. I know. It's not. Christmas Story, 23.
Oh, that's a great movie.
So that's right under it.
But that's a Christmas movie, so I kind of put that in a different category. You know that. Like, I can't watch that any time of the year.
Stand By Me is a 23, which we both had as 23.
That's a great movie. So. It's not quite perfect like this one, but it's damn close. Like, that to me is the, like, Stand By Me and Back to the Future, those are the two movies that I can look at and say, if anything gets as good as that, it's a 20, it's that good, you know. And there's not a lot.
And then That Thing You Do is 22 and a half.
That's because it's That Thing You Do.
So
I think it's a great movie as
that's
well.
Where we're at. Dazed and Confused, 22 and a half.
Great movies. These are great. You know, when you think of great movies, like if you said, Mike, we're going to watch these five movies and it's those five, you know,
yeah.
I'd be like, oh, okay.
This, I think this is one, like you said, everybody can agree on, because I also think this is one, if somebody doesn't want to watch, it's like, get the fuck out of my house then. What are you doing here?
Yeah. And if you show it to a kid now, they'll love it.
Yeah.
And that's the key. That's how good this movie is.
It is.
How good this
movie is. My son loved it.
Yeah. Because it's relevant today, even today, how the subject matter. Everybody wants to go back and bang their mom. All right. Is that it? Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We would like to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to join our Patreon so you can get some of that bonus content and other fun stuff. Remember, you can go to sodapopcultureclub.com for all things related to the show, including your chance to make movie suggestions, like we said earlier. Episode schedules there. Also, we have Instagram, Twitter, TikToks, things like that, Twitch channels, things in general. Anything else that we want to leave them with as we head off into the sunset?
Thank you for listening. And I do want to point out, we do not condone wanting or actually having sex with your own mother.
That is affirmative.